Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we have an action-packed show for you today. We're going to catch you up on the latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, it's a big motorsports weekend here. We've got Formula One in China. We have IndyCars at Thermal. We have NASCAR down in Florida. And we have NHRA drag racing in our own backyard down at Maricopa Chandler, where Firebird Raceway is located. So we'll talk about all that motorsports action. We've got Mecum auction, and that was concluded yesterday on Saturday. Had a great time out there. I've got some action from the auction for you. We'll also talk about what's going on with gas prices, and of course it wouldn't be The Car Show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on The Car Show. Off the show with talking about the Mecum Auto Auction, and I want to thank David Morton for putting together an opportunity for me to come out and get us some behind-the-scenes look at this event. There were so many cars out there, I don't have time to talk about all the great, cool cars I saw. But one of the ones that really jumped out at me was a 1973 Porsche 911 Carrera RS. 2.7-liter lightweight was only one of 200 of these cars produced. This was a Porsche 210 horsepower, 5-speed manual transmission, tangerine in color, and the interior was black. And what it makes it a lightweight, okay, so this car was designed to be used in kind of a racing configuration. The reduction in weight was achieved by using thinner steel for the body panels, thinner glass for the windows, and lightweight fiberglass bumpers and racing seats. According to the Porsche Registry, the car was delivered new to Italy and spent time in Switzerland before coming to the United States. And once again, one of only 200 of these cars ever built, and a beautiful tangerine orange. And I'm a fool for an orange car. So cool to see that vehicle. Of course, my phone just dinged. Sorry about that. I also want to talk about the fact that, speaking of other orange cars, the Bob Bondurant collection went on sale, and Bob had a 1997 Roush-prepared Ford Mustang that I actually have a little bit of audio to share with you from the auction itself. All right, so that car did not actually sell, the Bob Bondurant car. It got to $37,000, and that did not reach what is called the reserve, so the car did not sell. So they call that the bid goes on. But definitely a car tied to a local owner. Bob Bondurant passed away several years ago, former race car driver, and had the very famous Bob Bondurant School of High Performance Driving that was down in Chandler, Arizona, right next to where Firebird Raceway is located. So once again, thanks to the folks out at Mecum. Just had a blast and look forward to going back there again next year. Well, NHRA drag racing, as drag racing comes to town here in Arizona for the Arizona Nationals and down at Firebird Motorsports Park. And I just want to give a big shout out to Casey Buckman. I've known Casey since he was a very young man when his mom, Frankie, was the marketing director and basically ran the track out there with Charlie Allen. So today they're kicking off their final event, and if you want to catch that on television, that is actually going to start at 3:30 local time, and that is going to be on Fox Sports 1. Some highlights to talk about right now. We have Doug Coletta, who is your top qualifier, Bob Tasca in Funny Car. Doug Coletta is in Top Fuel, Bob Tasca is in Funny Car, and Matt Hartford in Pro Stock. Now, Coletta, who's the 2023 world champion, should be a strong favorite in the event this year. Brittany Force also is looking to have a strong run in her Monster Fueled Energy car. Let's talk about some of the past winners here. Sean Langdon, Austin Prock, and Greg Anderson in 2024. Most victories, Tony Schumacher with 5 wins. John Force has won at here 8 different times, and Bob Glidden won 5. The track records right now in Top Fuel, 3.643 seconds at 337 miles an hour, and that is by Brittany Force in February of 20. Funny Car, 3.823 seconds by Matt Hagen, and that's 337.61, and that was the highest top speed. National records right now, the fastest ever was in Top Fuel was Brittany Force in 2019 at a 338 miles per hour. So if you get a chance, go check it out. They'll be back hopefully again next March for an in-person activity if you'd like to go check it out. But today you can catch the broadcast on Fox Sports 1 at 3:30, and we'll have those results for you next weekend. Well, from the pages of Old Car Weekly, third time's a charm, a charming Lincoln. Memories and family connections can be powerful influences when it comes to tasting older cars. But adding a certain amount of determination can be that final push across the proverbial finish line. Well, it was only 1 or 2 days after my grandfather bought his and happened to be at his house. I happened to be at his house when the car was delivered, recalls George Simon, the owner of a 1956 Lincoln Premier. The salesman delivered the car to the house and took away the old one. And I can remember 2 or 3 days later, I was in elementary school and I had to draw something. And I remembered enough about that car to be able to draw it. Well, that Lincoln would leave a strong impression, and it's easy to understand. It was new and a fresh design for 1956, with barely a nod to its immediate predecessor and a world apart from the Lincoln a decade before. Now, like every other domestic automaker, Lincoln reappeared after World War II's interruption with a slightly updated version of its 1942 line that included a V12 flathead, the last American production engine of its type, via the top range in the Lincoln Continental. A connection with the classic car era was all but over. The V12 finally vanished at the end of 1948 and was replaced by a flathead V8 in the 1949 Lincoln. The 49 Lincolns were the division's first truly new post-war models and bore no resemblance to the previous cars. Slab-sided with smooth lines and soft curves, it was not a car that would pass unnoticed on the street. Advertising boasted Lincoln has a new idea in designing cars for you. Claimed that never before in the designing of a car has there been such determination to produce the most perfectly integrated balance of mechanisms possible for your driving ease. That's the Lincoln idea. Now, for those of you who were disappointed with the V12 loss and were told that the new flathead V8 was magnificent and unsurpassed in the entire line, regarding its all-around durability, low operating costs, and high efficiency. Well, advertising hype, perhaps, but its 152 horsepower from 337 cubic inches was a nice jump from the 305 cubic inch V12 and 130 horsepower. If 1949 Lincoln had one fault, it bore a very strong resemblance to a contemporary Mercury. Even the upscale Lincoln Cosmopolitan had its different lines, but still looked like a Mercury, and the casual observer might have guessed incorrectly upon seeing one. Lincoln's visual connection to Mercury continued in 1952 with a Lincoln redesign, as it did in 1949, resulted in an entirely new look. Gone were the gentle curves and slightly bulbous shape, replaced by a much straighter line and a slightly boxy shape. The smooth lines were eliminated as the Lincoln now wore a hint of a separate rear quarter fender in the stamping of the quarter panel on the four-door models and the rear door. That probably mattered with many potential owners, but there was something else that likely appealed to a group of prospects. Advertising subtly addressed that those drivers explained that here is dramatic proof that the last is a fine car that doesn't need to be ponderous or unwieldy. The new Lincoln, for all its luxury and roominess, was easy handling in traffic and superbly responsive on the highway. Now, the superbly responsive part came from Lincoln's new engine, a 317 cubic inch V8, good for 160 horsepower, with a new overhead valve design, which allowed for larger valves and a longer stroke for higher RPMs and more horsepower. Cadillac and Oldsmobile had also introduced new engines in 1949, thus opening the modern era of V8 engines. Now, the performance aspect of the Mercury look-alike were followed in 1956 with a total redesign, and that was a good year for the remaining American luxury cars, and only Lincoln was new, with some visual connections to the 1953 Lincoln and the 1954 Mercury Monterey. These were concept cars, and they were the longest, lowest, and most powerful Lincolns of the time, and that was a big deal back in those days. Now, in a sign of the times, a new tall greenhouse glass wraparound with front and rear pointed glass really pointed to the space age. Hood lamps mounted in a curvaceous shape, a trim extending over the car's large oval parking lamps. Now, the ads spoke to the magnificence of the Lincoln's interiors, fashioned with youthful flair, the beauty of the motion and the longest Lincoln's, how it carries itself. The most significant was the beauty of the power of the 285 horsepower Lincoln engine that whisks you around the plodding van or carries you safely and swiftly from the clover leaf onto the thoroughfare. Taken together, made Lincoln the finest car in the field. Well, all that helps explain the impression that this Lincoln left on Simon and his grandfather's Lincoln, and another factor entered in when he had a chance to drive the car. And that probably made it more painful because he was unable to buy it. It was 10 years old and it had 86,000 miles on it, Link, Simon recalled. The interior was still like new, and it was a two-door, and the body was about 95%. It needed a new starter, and I could have had it for $200. But I was going to school, and I didn't have $200, and I really didn't have any place to store the car itself. Well, about 15 years later, he owned one similar to it, but along the way, he had crossed the border from Pennsylvania from his home in New York to take a look at a Packard, and it really didn't interest him, but it shared a garage with the Lincoln, and he thought, well, this is nice, and he made arrangements to contact the owner and look at the Lincoln. And he remembered me. He said, yeah, the Lincoln, it's a nice car. Would you like to drive it? And I said, sure. So we went out and drove it 5 or 6 miles, went down Interstate 81. We put it back in the garage, and I said, well, that's a nice car. He said, yeah, well, nice to see you. And that was the end of the interview. And I said, okay, I guess I've been dismissed. Well, it could have ended there, but it didn't. Well, Simon made another trip to the Pennsylvania garage and looked at the Lincoln once more and was told, well, it's nice to see you again. That experience inspired him to employ his big gun, his black Lincoln Premier. 2 weeks later, he was at the garage again yet. So I took my other Lincoln down, the other 56, and pulled into his yard, Simon considered. He was so enthralled with the black one, he said, do you want the green one? You can have it. Well, the price was fair, and Simon believed the seller was mostly concerned that the Lincoln would go to the right home. It was in good condition after completing the transfer of the registration. He hopped in and drove to a car show in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, a 4-hour trip and a 68,000-mile car, which was uneventful, which is less than surprising, since for unknown reasons, the Lincoln's engine had been rebuilt at 50,000 miles. Simon has the receipt for that work. Nearly everything was done by the original first owner. I've got all the paperwork on it, and it went down from New York and was traded for a 49 Lincoln and drove this new one back. In contrast, the impression left by his grandfather's Lincoln, very few who see the car can identify it, even though it has numerous badges. He guessed that maybe only about 25% of the people who see this car get it right. And occasionally, it's mistaken for some of its contemporary competitors. Sometimes it's a Packard. Sometimes they just plain don't know and forget the circumstances. But I drove the car to work one day, and I parked in a parking lot. It was a small family-run business, and one of the guys who was in there says, hey, who owns that nice Cadillac out there? So, long story about a beautiful car and how sometimes those family relationships and what Grandpa drove really impacts what the family owns and wants to pursue in ownership of a classic car. This is of Racer Magazine. The article is NASCAR's approval process needs a rethink. Well, over the last three seasons, NASCAR Cup Series has included some of the biggest names from the motorsports world. Raikkonen, Button, Kobayashi, Van Ginsburg, Castroneves, and Legg. All of them had taken their best shot at NASCAR's highest level with mixed results. And it wasn't uncommon to hear from all of them about how tough it was, or to hear the next driving the next-gen car was difficult. On the other hand, what comes across as flattering to NASCAR is it's top-notch. Whoever sits behind the steering wheel just didn't come over and make the regulars look bad, aside from Van Ginsburg on the streets of Chicago. But on the other hand, perhaps not a good thing, is the best race car drivers are having struggles when it comes to NASCAR, and that issue has been a topic of conversation since Catherine Legg made her debut in Phoenix 2 weeks ago and collected Daniel Suarez in an incident. Suarez was not the only driver who was vocal afterwards about NASCAR's approval process, which he took more issue with than Legg herself. Suarez argued that Legg was set up for failure, and so would any other driver, good or bad, when they were thrown into these difficult situations. There was also something Suarez said that stood out. When he asked about short track drivers and they should be able to run, to which the trackhouse driver revealed that NASCAR didn't want to put an inexperienced driver at a play, put them on Bristol and Motor Speedway, but not on the big tracks. I said to NASCAR, and these were my exact words, that's the problem. They shouldn't be thinking about getting in our way. That's not what we want. We want them to come out here and we want them to be competitive. That's the mentality's got to change. We have to rethink this mentality. Well, NASCAR has been open to having other drivers compete in its series, but there's one issue. If NASCAR wants elite drivers to come, they need to be able to compete. There's plenty of debate about this process. Kyle Busch flat out calls it broken over the weekend. He said the issue that Suarez pointed out is the preparation, because 25 minutes of practice in a single qualifying lap is not enough track time. Yeah, putting them in the simulators is great, but it's not real life. And NASCAR doesn't offer a cup rookie test, and teams are no longer allowed to test to take a driver and test to their heart's content till they're comfortable in the car. And this loss of track time has been a topic for years, and you could get a split in the garage for who wants practice and who doesn't think they need it. Well, that debate could come out when we're talking about new individuals coming out to run. Testing is tough because we're talking about Catherine Legg's situation. I don't know how much extra funds there are with Live Fast Motorsports to be able to come out early and test, even if it was available. Well, it is about track time. Busch is not the only one who pointed out the financial aspect. Denny Hamlin did and said, well, whether there's a test, he gets it, but who's paying for the test? Is NASCAR going to pay for it, or the teams who are bringing the drivers out? Are they going to pay for it? So it's a tough series and a tough car, but it's still tough to expect a driver to come make waves without any kind of experience in these cars. The value of seat time is often attached to the development of younger drivers, and it should be the same when we bring some of the same in for the motorsports elite looking to come to NASCAR to drive the race cars. And I totally agree. Catherine Legg's a great driver. Elio Castroneves is a great driver. All these race car drivers are very successful in their own right. But if you don't get out and have seat time in another vehicle, how are you ever going to get any good at it? So there's some rethinking here that needs to happen on NASCAR's part. Well, last weekend, NASCAR was up in Las Vegas, and Josh Berry, first-time winner, driving for the Wood Brothers. Now, the Wood Brothers is a historic NASCAR team that now happens to be working with the Penske guys. Daniel Suarez finished in second. Ryan Preece, driving for his new team, finished in third. William Byron in fourth, and Ross Chastain rounding out the top five. So very exciting for Josh Berry in just his 53rd Cup race wins at Las Vegas. NASCAR this week is down in Florida, and Arizona guy Alex Bowman is on the pole. Josh Berry, who won the race last weekend, is going to start second. Noah Gregson is going to start in third, and Chase Briscoe will start in fourth. And that race is on today at noon, and that's going to be on Fox Sports 1. And we'll have those results for you next weekend. Well, if you stayed up in the middle of the night last night, you got a chance to watch the Formula One race from China, and Oscar Piastri won the race. He also started on the pole, for McLaren, and Lando Norris finished in second. So we had a 1-2 finish for the folks over at McLaren. Lando started in third and was able to make a big pass on the opening lap. George Russell finished in third, and Max Verstappen rounded out the top four. Now, there's a little bit of controversy here. We had some disqualifications at this race, and that doesn't happen very often. And Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton driving for Ferrari were disqualified, and Pierre Gasly was disqualified as well. Leclerc and Gasly were both found underweight by 1 kilogram, folks. 1 kilo. And the teams admitted that there were no mitigating factors here. They just made a mistake in the weight of their car, because the car has to weigh a certain amount with the fuel out of the car at the end of the race. Now, Lewis Hamilton's car was cited for having excessive wear to the rearward skid pads. They have to be a certain width, they have to be a certain height after the race, and because they actually rub on the pavement as the car races through different parts of the track. So 3 big drivers disqualified from the running of the Chinese Grand Prix. 2 of the Ferrari drivers disqualified. Well, the IndyCars are in the general vicinity. They're over in Thermal, California, which is over by Palm Springs. And speaking of McLaren, well, how about this? We got 2 McLarens starting on the front row in the IndyCar race. Pato O'Ward and Christian Lundgaard will start first and second, with Alex Palou, the defending champion, and who won this race last year. But last year it was not a points-carrying race. It was just a race for exhibition. We'll start in third. And Colton Herta in fourth, and Marcus Ericsson will start in fifth. So McLaren having a good weekend so far. Let's see if they can continue with their winning ways in IndyCar. And that race will be today, and that'll be on Fox broadcast, so Fox 10. And that race will start right after the car show at 12 noon. And I'll have those results for you next weekend. Well, many times we have the weird and unusual automotive news, and this is a feel-good story from the pages of The Drive, and the headline reads, Nurse Rallies Car Community to Bring 11-Year-Old Cancer Patient a Great Show. A car community around Whitman, Massachusetts showed up in fine form for a young car enthusiast. Well, Alex Young is an 11-year-old boy from Massachusetts who's been battling cancer since age 4. The illness doesn't define him, but he also has a passion, as most of you who are listening or reading this article. This week, the nurse rallied the car community and law enforcement to organize a drive-by car show for the lad to enjoy. According to WCVB5, they talked to Susan Nipot, who is the Young's nurse, who told the outlet that she made a Facebook post with the family's blessing, calling for locals with cool cars to come by. And within hours, people had mobilized. And on Thursday, a impressively diverse group of enthusiasts paraded through the cul-de-sac for Young to look at and enjoy, and even got to sit in and ride in a Lamborghini. It's just so amazing so many people care and would do something like that. He's loving it, according to the boy's grandmother, Catherine Young, who told the ABC station, he's a fighter. He's just loving today. The Whitman Police Department presided over town and took this in and loaded the broadcast of the activities onto their Facebook page. The car show is impressive. It looks like it might have been in California. Everything from modern muscle cars to classic American iron, Japanese tuner cars, supercars, old cars, and even a Ford GT40 made an appearance. Now, Massachusetts, in my opinion, is a challenging place to be a car enthusiast. The weather is often bad, the roads are salted aggressively, and they're in a little rough shape. But the state still has track events, and evidenced by the turnout here, there's a great automotive community there. Gas price with our friends at AAA. Right now, the average gas price in the United States is $3.12. Here in Arizona, the average gas price is going to be $3.37 a gallon. Let's see what's going on here with our gas prices here in Arizona. Well, right now, the least expensive gas in Arizona is going to be in Casa Grande, $2.63 at the 76 station, the Arco station at $2.69 in Casa Grande as well. And let's see, is there anything? Yep, all the cheap gas is in Casa Grande. So if you're heading that way, fill up. Well, in Metro Phoenix, see, you can find gas prices just barely hovering below $3. $2.99 will get you gas at Circle K in Maricopa. The Fry's in Maricopa is at $2.99 as well. And the Costco station on 79th Avenue at $3.04. Well, it's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, I have a question about blowouts. I rented a Dodge Durango for a road trip. In less than 2 hours of highway driving on my trip, the driver's side rear tire blew out. Unfortunately, the total failure caused damage to the underside and the body around the wheel. Luckily, I maintained control of the car. Now, this blowout has resulted in some fighting with the rental car company and insurance, as well as between me and my friends regarding the causes of these blowouts. Perhaps tires in the early days failed randomly, but with modern tires, am I right that there needs to be an external cause? And that's from Daryl. Well, an external or internal cause, Daryl, you're correct. When a tire blows out, it blows out for a reason. Now, there are some possibilities. The tires on your rental car could have had significant wear on them, and an extreme circumstance combined with high heat or high speed, that could cause the blowout. But most likely what happened is this fact that the tire was punctured, regardless of the condition. It could have been a previous renter scraped up against a curb in their parallel parking. Now, the reality is, many times that there are lawsuits regarding these serious accidents, and we're glad that didn't happen in your case. But the reality is that many times the damaged sidewall could be an issue, or most likely you ran over a sharp object, and they're going to consider that your fault when that happens. So I think in reality, you're probably going to lose on this situation with the insurance companies. One thing you can do in the future, and especially now with many rental cars keeping their vehicles and their fleets much longer, besides looking at the body and the dents and the scratches on the doors when you do your walk around, you need to look at the tires themselves. Look at the sidewalls. Do you see any bubbles? Do the tires look old? Are they worn or are they cracked? So if you see something like that, you note it on the rental car contract, or better yet, ask them for a different car. Yeah, that's a great point. I rent cars very often, and I don't think I've ever looked at the tires on a rental car to see if they're in good shape. And he's very lucky in this situation because it just didn't, you know, the air just didn't come out and pull off to the side of the road. The tire blew out, and it caused significant body damage to the body damage and also to probably to the suspension itself. So that's great, great idea to make sure that when you're renting a car, not just looking at the scratches and the dents and those visual cues on the body itself, you need to take a look at the tires because you're responsible for that as well. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name is Jeff Wine, and we'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.